At 6 o'clock, we'll be opening a work session for the Planning Commission for November 10th, 2020. First order of business will be a pledge of allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. The next order of business will be the Finance Department comments.
Sorry, I'm not ready to make any comments. I'm brutally honest. I don't really have anything additional to add. I did send a memo that went out with your package, some things that happened at the last Board of Supervisors meeting, some things that were funded, a couple of buses for the school, some additions to the Abrams building to take care of some immediate needs, and then we've been able to use some CARES funds for some power loads and cots for fire and rescue. Other than that, pretty much everything is the same as it was we presented last week. If you have any questions for me, I'll be happy to try and answer any questions that you have.
Anybody got any questions?
Right, good. All right. I'll be here if you have any.
Thank
you. I did have a question, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes.
And I read this about the $200,000 for Abrams.
Yes.
Are we then going to be taking items off the list, or this is in addition to what we've asked for?
My understanding is that's in addition to what's being asked for in next year's CIP.
We would like for it to be in addition to that as well, just because of the continuing process that's going to happen.
I think that was for some immediate need to be fixed right now items.
And then as far as the buses, this funds takes care of the five buses, or we have to add additional funds?
Again, my understanding is that is also additional. The three buses you were able to get through CARES money and the two with carryover funds, that's in addition to the ones you're asking for 22?
It's in addition, yes.
Yes.
Thank you, ma'am.
All right, you're welcome.
Okay, now will be our public comment section. Any public comment for this session will be limited to our work session for tonight. Anybody wishing to speak on our CIP plan for 2022 through 26, may come and state your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing number one coming forward, we will end the public comment section at this time and go to our work session, a ranking of the capital improvements plan for 2022 through 2026.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Yes,
yes, ma'am.
I've lost sound.
I'm going to go to bed now.
that.
Oh, you know what? Yes, we got out.
Travis, you're hooked up with your phone too. Okay, try again.
I'm having trouble with it.
Okay.
I had it all packed.
Yeah, I had it earlier today.
Well, they're off, so they can download.
I can block from my phone. Server stop response.
If I can, I'll call the company.
I'm trying to open my iPad and it says the server's not responding.
The server?
That's what it's saying. I've went to both of them. I even tried the second trail he did. I've had it on all the times.
Are you connected?
But in the summer, I'm going to try to
get here.
The pole barn is
new. And the original one, I've been having no problem with the original one. That one's there. It's down. Yeah, keep it up. Maybe.
Because it's on the other monitor.
Did you ever get it done?
Okay. After went out of the Wi-Fi and then back into Wi-Fi, and then it loaded up. So.
Only gonna do
the one, but this is a 5-year thing.
imagine though, that would be a one. Yeah, okay.
Unless we decide.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what was trying.
Yeah, they're just putting, they're not even, they didn't even.
I think, yeah.
It's not like, fully understand the designation. Yeah. Shut up.
Oh, I've got mine.
What do you mean, every other night? Put it up, yeah. I took mine out right now.
You could use.
No, I'm fine. But put it up on the screen.
Maybe you need to feel free to holler.
Yeah.
Barry, help me that tonight, it's on, must be closed.
8 o'clock.
Eight o'clock.
Except on Saturdays, they close.
Sometimes I might run up.
It's 7 o'clock in the morning. Like these two, they close way. So it's Friday, same thing, it's Saturday, 7. They're closed Wednesday, same.
Oh.
They're only open 5 days a week. Have you heard anything about the village?
John, the only thing I do is a sign up, no, it's closed, I'll come early, no, I think that's changed.
Yeah.
I heard the man that owned that, he died and left it to his wife, and she doesn't want anybody, you know, contact us. That's what I heard.
There were parts of which you would have.
I would think so. But I was, last Sunday, the people that run in the room and place, they closed up, they left. And it went on the end of the building, web, that is political office, and they finished up. Not the one they left, that's the DFW. Down the far end. Yeah. All, listen, down in the bottom, right past where the laundromat used to be.
Okay. Simple.
Oh, that's right, they got to do it. Sophia's anger can see what's going on.
Yeah, they got to do that. She's on the line, then she said she couldn't hear. I don't know what's going on.
No, I cannot hear you. Okay, I can't hear you.
We know.
That's fine.
Oh,
thank you.
Somebody will do it. It'll help us not to get it.
Really here.
This is the.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I can see you.
Yep, it's on the internet now.
On the screen, yeah.
Yeah. Take my chair.
Viola. There you go.
Yeah, she can be able to hear us. Come ask us. She can hear us.
Mrs. Zinger, can you hear us, ma'am?
It's embarrassing to be muted.
Mrs. Zinger, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay, thank you. I think we're good now, ma'am.
Okay.
We're back on track now. Chairman Bibbs, we're now on, we were on the internet, but not in the room. I apologize. If you want to go, are you, you can now go over the CIP process. The rankings, sir?
Oh, I announced that earlier, but.
Okay.
But
we just didn't have it up on the screen.
Yeah, we're going into the work session, ranking of the capital improvement plan for years 2022 through 2026, and it'll be up on the screen, the different projects and the rankings that the departments have done, and we will just be ranking the 2022 projects. In the community services, the only project that's ranked at all for this coming to 2022 is the spray park. Does anybody have any comments about that, or do we, how do we want to rank that?
Chair.
Yes.
I would suggest that's a pretty modest request, and the way things have been, I understand next budget year will probably be tight, but I would suggest we go ahead and keep that ranked as a one.
I agree. Anybody else have any comments?
I agree, Mr. Chairman. Just to give our community the opportunity to, for those who cannot travel to other localities, for the opportunity for their children to enjoy some of the water opportunities. So I support it as number one as well.
So we're going to rank that as a one. Everybody agree?
Yes.
I do have a question. The fact is, I know that we're having us to rank it, and no changes were made because of the CARE program and so forth like that. I'm kind of looking at the thing and shows at the top that this year that most of what they're planned on was going to be coming out of the fund balance. And that was kind of, I looked at that, if we have that money on hand, or when we are ranking these, do we need to be really careful with what we?
So to answer your first question, do we have $6.2 million to fund out of fund balance? The answer is no.
Okay. This was a question.
Yeah, no, like I said. Like I said, once the planning commission goes through and makes their recommendations for rankings on these projects, the board of supervisors is then going to have to determine, you know, what, from a fiscal standpoint, what projects they're going to be able to fund.
Okay, thank you.
I'll just say to answer questions if you had any.
We're fine.
Okay, thank you.
The next is Public Works, quite a few projects there, and we've got to make us decide how we want to rank these particular ones, because there are, by the actual, that department has ranked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 projects at a 1. One of them's ranked at a 3, and that's re-ranked at a 2 in their mind, so more like that. In my estimation, that we probably should concentrate upon the ones. And if we have any questions, the director of the Public Works is here.
Well, I think one of the things we want to think about is, I agree with what Ed said at the last meeting about the Currisbrook equipment shed. If you don't protect the equipment, pretty soon you won't have any. I think it should definitely be a one.
Which one?
The Currisbrook equipment shed, storage shed. Isn't that the one for the off-the
equipment
and so forth?
There was, now also I had another question on the Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund. Has that already been funded from last year?
So every year the board has generally put money into the Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund, and what funds are remaining from the previous fiscal year just continue to roll over. So we generally try and fund $250,000 a year. This past year was only $200,000 a year, because both the county and schools both have a capital request, capital reserve fund, and they had a little bit more funds in there than we were able to fund this past year, the carryover. So the board funded a little bit less than the $250,000.
Question is that equipment purchase and replacement plan is, what equipment is that, and that what kind of priority? It's ranked a 1, but is it a priority with that situation going on?
Our equipment is aged out and failing at this point. We spend a lot of money maintaining it and fixing it, and it's very wasteful in my estimate. I think some of the equipment just has to be replaced. If we continue to, I mean, we're going to spend it one way or another, because we have to have the equipment working.
And that's the equipment that hopefully they'll have a shed to put it in, so
exactly.
It'll have a longer lifespan.
Is any of this equipment used for snow removal or anything like that?
It is. The tractor is, our main tractor, a small tractor, 3 trucks. Yes.
What about these social services building? I think that's a 2 anyway, so maybe I'll just go past that. Actually, I wanted to know about the social services vehicles. Are they at the point that they actually need replacing?
Social services building?
Vehicles. I know at one time last year they were talking about they actually had a thermal that they weren't even using.
For their vehicles, they're requesting 1 vehicle a year. So do they have vehicles that need to be replaced just like county? Yes. There are many vehicles in social services fleet and county fleet that need to be replaced. Again, that's going to basically boil down to, does the board of supervisors have the funding available to fund them?
And social services did not get a vehicle in FY21 because they were able to buy 2 newer used vehicles in 2020. So they actually didn't get a new vehicle last year.
So the 1 vehicle is kind of their replacement cycle to make sure that their vehicles are aging out and then to replace.
Okay.
we are talking about the safety of our senior citizens and our staff and our young people that use or need social services, and the safety transportation of those individuals to and from. And are we doing, is there a cutoff point? Like, I don't know how many vehicles we have. Let's say we have 10. And we talked about the two that they were able to purchase. And then, so it's not like every year we're going to be replacing. We're just trying to replace them all until we get them.
Well, I mean, really at this point, I don't know what their oldest vehicle is. You know what their oldest vehicle is right now?
I don't. They've got probably not over 8 years old.
Yeah.
But we're talking about a lot of miles because we are a rural area. And
some of them may have a lot of miles. And generally, ideally, if you could get into a 7, I know previously from county vehicles, we tried to get into a 7-year replacement cycle, but it's just not, that's ideal. So, I mean, so by them requesting one a year, it keeps up with replacing the vehicles that are aged out and you know, becoming more of a maintenance issue than anything.
Our package shows for next year it's a 2008 to replace it.
I'm sorry?
The package shows a 2008 to replace it.
Yep. So again, that 12 years old, that's...
These folks have pretty significant workloads and caseloads, taking one worry off their plate by not having to drive around in a 2008 vehicle with lots and lots of miles on is probably a number one.
What we probably need to do is to go ahead and try to do the ranking of the public works items at this time, because we're behind to start with, and with the fact that we kind of started late. So does anybody have any suggestions about ranking of any of these items? Looks like everybody's in agreement that we do the social services vehicle at a 1.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask a question, please?
Sure.
So we have, if I'm calling it correctly, maybe 4 number ones. If we kept them all at number ones and submitted them with what we're doing tonight, is the, and I'm asking our administrator, Is the board of supervisors going to look at all 4 of those and make their recommendation, or are we limited to only picking 2 from each section, or what does that look like?
No, I mean, from the place that I can't speak 100% of the board standpoint when it comes time to determine what's going to be funded, but if they have to trim back on what is funded, they're going to first and foremost look to see what was the number one ranking from the departments, and then at that point they may need to then say, you know, they may need to whittle down that ranking a little bit further from the department head. What is most important? If he's got 4 number ones, well, you tell me what your number one of your 4 number ones is, and so on and so forth.
Exactly 5 number one in that section, I think.
Yeah, like I said, social services vehicle, that's the vehicles, they fall under social service. I mean, they fall under the county as far as fleet maintenance, but social services is really the one that understands and requests their vehicles specifically.
In looking at the other vehicles, the county vehicle line, there's a pretty good layout of what they're using to determine whether it needs replaced. It talks about, you know, 10 years for sedans, 175,000 miles. I mean, that, it's reasonable.
Yes. Well,
it's kind of long, actually, I would say. 10 years and 175 and stuff. So they're getting full use out of these vehicles, without a doubt.
Well, my thinking on that we should probably go ahead and leave the number ones that the department ranked as number one, and leave the others for future years.
I agree, sir.
Yeah. I guess
I'll
leave. Thank you. Okay, the next is public safety. Sheriff's Department has the Sally Port and Sheriff's vehicles. I know we've been talking about the Sally Port and the safety part of that for quite a long time and so forth. So my thinking, my personal thinking is the Sally Port and the vehicles should be ranked number
yes,
one.
I agree with you.
Pretty modest request also.
Exactly.
I agree.
Okay, the next one is the fire and rescue, and we're talking about a lot of dollars and some of this stuff, but all of these items are ranked at number one. You got the vehicle apparatus, you got the park monitor replacement, and the upgrades to Ambulance 45.
So the upgrades to Ambulance 45 have been removed. Those were provided by CARES Act funding, so that's no longer on the table.
And what did, I forgot what the vehicle apparatus replacement was for, what was the ambulance?
So there's a variety of projects that were carried over from previous years that were approved by the Board of Supervisors but not funded. And those are listed there. And then there are the current ones that still need to be replaced as of this fiscal year. But among those, yes, are several ambulances. And I should note, I mentioned last time when we were here that Ambulance 554 was involved in a crash. I'm still waiting to hear from the insurance company. I talked to them on Friday. I expect an offer from them sometime this week. I was hoping to have it today, but they didn't call me back. So that may be coming off the request as well, because if the insurance replaces it, then we won't need to replace it again right away, obviously. So I was hoping I could give you good news today, but they haven't called back yet. So I don't know what that offer is going to be at this time. But I suspect we will not need to include that in the CIP request.
So in other words, we really don't know how many items are going to be in the vehicle apparatus replacement because of that possibility.
Right. So the new ones are Ambulance 554 and Car 30. Those are the new ones. And 554 I'm about 90% sure it'll be coming off. I don't know what the offer is going to be, but they have told me it is a total and we have full replacement cost on it. So I'm about 90% sure that we will not need to.
And as well as I remember, 45 really needs a lot of upgrades, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes, sir. But that's already paid. That's already taken care of with CARES Act money. So the other big one is the heart monitor replacement, and that's those are at end of life. Those absolutely have to be replaced. We're doing demos with the vendors starting this week to see which one we're going to get. There are three main vendors out there, and I don't know which way we're going to go yet. We haven't seen the newest models, but that's a have to.
In my estimation, if we should go ahead and rank the vehicle apparatus and the heart monitors as number one, even though we don't know which apparatus is going to be replaced, the possibility that 554 will be taken care of by the insurance company.
Yes, sir.
And we know that 45 is coming off, so it's really only two items.
We have to do the heart monitor replacement, because anybody is subjected to a situation with their heart, and we don't want any of our vehicles showing up don't have the equipment necessary.
Right. Thank you. Yes.
Okay. As far as I'm concerned, we've ranked the vehicle apparatus as one and the heart monitors as one. Do I have agreement?
Yes.
Okay. Everybody agrees. Thank you. Okay. Next is the schools. Of course, the capital, the maintenance fund is every year, so that's an item that goes into that every year. We've got 1, 2, 4 items that are ranked number one, and the rest are the items are ranked number two.
Can I ask a question, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
So, Mr. Stribling, I guess I would ask, given the critical nature of technology and how y'all are instructing children today, I see technology here, which I see is critical. Chromebook replacements and things like that. Why is it only a number two?
At that point, we were working with the county. We just received 125 to assist with Chromebook replacement. And we really don't know what that figure is going to be because we don't know how many are going to come back in good shape. We're hoping for the best, but we don't know that number right now. We've only had probably a half dozen that we've had to replace, or the parents were working with the families to replace that. Because as of right now, this year, we just don't have a figure, and that's kind of why we want to put that kind of wedge in there, and we put it as a two. Yes, sir.
You're comfortable even today with it as a two and not a one?
I wouldn't say comfortable, but I would say I would say that, you know, as of right now, as we speak, we just don't have any numbers that we could present to you that would be, you know, do we need? We're gonna use the 125, but we just don't have a figure right now.
Mr. Jr., one thing if I can add, one thing that we kind of discussed with the schools is generally this technology line. This was envisioned to be for more large ticket items in the school.
Yes.
Like if they had to do a major server replacement, which costs, you know, $250,000, but onesie twosies like Chromebooks and stuff like that would generally try to be funded out of their operations budget and what they do, since Chromebooks are essentially almost like, you know, books nowadays, and they get replaced. So.
Okay. Because we did do a technology something last year. We were talking about technology.
We've been doing that for about the last 5 or 6 years.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And yes, ma'am. 2 years ago, I believe we did a big project. Last year, we requested the 75 as a wedge. We didn't do that, and because we didn't have a project per se, more what Mr. Dahl was saying.
Yeah,
can I ask a question? This is Patricia.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, how many Chromebooks were purchased with CARES Act money?
Ooh. I don't have that figure, and I don't even want to guesstimate that number. I want to say 3,500, but I can't be for sure.
I want to say Chuck said at the last meeting, Mr. Winkler, I thought he said $4,000 is 4,000. Yes, 4,000 is kind of sticking to my memory a little bit, is what he said at the Board of Supervisors meeting. A similar question came up.
4,000 Chromebooks were purchased.
Isn't that what he said, Mrs. Eager?
It was a lot, but I don't remember exactly either.
Like I said, don't quote me on, but I vaguely remember Mr. Winkler saying something around 4,000.
And that 35, four, yeah. That number sounds familiar, yes.
Okay.
The Currysbrook Elementary Heating and Air Conditioning system. They've been talking about that for a long, long time and so forth like that. And that seems like it's an item that really needs to be replaced.
Yes, sir. From an efficiency standpoint, and it is operational, okay? But we're working on it weekly and bi-weekly. We found out it is operational, it is working, but it is not working as efficiently as some of our newer HVAC, so it will help the cost of the efficiency of it. And the only reason we know this is because we had Train come in and do an air efficiency study, air quality and flow, because that helps with our COVID mitigation strategies. Again, works, but doesn't work like the other ones. And we actually are working with Train now to get some bipolar ionizers, which will help with our COVID strategies. It does need to be replaced.
Upgrade. And just one thing from a funding standpoint on that, I mean, just due to the dollar amount, $1.5 million, the board most likely will not have the cash funds to just pay for that outright. So that may be something where the board is going to need to choose to possibly take out some type of debt funding to do that project.
Okay. There's no opportunity for CARES funding to
CARES?
Yeah.
No.
Well, that school safety vestibules is something that most schools are going to now, and I think for the safety of our children, I think that should definitely be a number one. We got to go back and talk about the heating and air conditioning. Are we going to leave that as a number one? And let the, because all we're doing is advising what we think to the Board of Supervisors. They're going to have the final decision. They know, they're going to know what the money funding is going to be and so forth like that. So I do know that I heard about this particular heating and air conditioning in the past and the fact that the efficiency and so forth and the maintenance has been quite lots.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I would throw out that I'm pretty comfortable with their ranking as they have it there.
I am too.
With the one exception or question, I guess, the Abrams Academy seems like that's on the list every year and never rises above a two. At what point is that building going to fall down? So I'm just asking, are we going to?
It's the foundation. We're looking at it. I know Mr. Dahl and I have spoke about a kind of short-term plan and a long-term plan, but what we've been trying to do is, and we've used some CRM funds to do a project for the last 3 years, I believe. So we fixed part of the foundation that we needed to support, fixed a room, did the carpet. So even if we're not able to do it big scale, we're trying to take out pieces. The carryover that we've gotten from the county, which is gratefully appreciated, thank you. We're going to meet with operations Thursday to start invitation to bid, request to bid for bid, to look at bathroom remodels and any additional abatement that we need. So that'll be the next step. That's why, and I know Ms.
You're comfortable with that being a two.
Yeah, as long as we can.
Often that anybody encourages you to spend more, but that's sort of what
is. I think the HVAC would be the big ticket item this year. Any additional funding that we could get would be great. But if we're able to continue to do a segment at a time, or I'm all about doing it all at once too, but if we can continue to make progress, it'll just be a 10-year plan. At least we're seeing movement. 5 years ago, we saw no movement. Now we're seeing at least movement.
The one thing that has changed with this item, so the school just received $200,000
yes.
in funding from the county just this past Wednesday from carryover funds. So, Mr. Stribling, how does that change the overall project that's here? Because you had 125, 125, 500, 500, 300. And this was submitted pre-$200,000 that you just received.
It doesn't necessarily change. It would just mean if we did get the additional funding, we would take on the next step.
But you're going to take care of the bathrooms and the abatement with the $200,000 that the board just let you carry over, are you?
That is the initial project. I'm not sure. We've got to get bids for that, Ms. Eager, so I'm not sure where that price range will come in, but that's our initial thought, yes.
Okay. So that's already covered.
That also was some additional funding gave for school buses.
Yes, sir.
But you want to keep this as a one to try to catch up on?
So the school buses, we're trying to get to the 15-year cycle. We've got about 16 buses for the 15-year cycle. And what you need to realize is every year that we don't do, and I think if we took six a year for the next 5 years, we would catch up. Because every year, so if we did six, that's a plus or minus for the buses that are in that current year that go to year 15 or 15 plus. I will say that we're making a closer move with the most recent purchases, thank you again, with the 20-year cycle. But the Virginia Department of Transportation recommends a 15. We put together a 15 and a 20, so we're trying to make it as fiscally possible.
Did they change that back during the financial crisis to change the amount of years? Did the Virginia change that? Did it used to be less than 15, or is 15 the new thing?
I've known 15. I'll double check on that, but okay. 15 has been the number that
back
I
during the financial crisis, there was a change in that. I used to have that somewhere, but I don't know exactly where that right now.
But with the is that 900,000 for buses? How many buses can you buy with that?
Approximately 9, if I can work with our representative. We've been able to, typically a standard bus costs between 110 and 118. We have been working with representatives of Bluebird to try and get them in under 100, so we're looking to try and get 9.
Okay, and aren't you going to be buying 5 between what the board gave you and the money from CARES?
Yes, ma'am.
So this 9 and 5, would that be 14 in 1 year?
Yes, ma'am. That would be optimal.
With virtual school right now with COVID, are you all seeing or hearing back from the surveys that their parents, that's not going to send their kids back to school in general, not just talking through the end of the school year? What I'm trying to gauge is, are we losing any percentage of students to a private teaching sector, which would affect how many buses that we need? Because one of my concerns is, and as was last time, is going back to the Abrams School. And for a building to be as old as it is, the significance of the building and the people that work there and the job that they do, the motivation, encouragement, that just in a workspace, that is a number one to me. And you know, I can appreciate the Board of Supervisors and you know, anyone giving funds to the cause, but still looking at this whole 10-year stretch out as opposed to knocking out some of these things, you know, up front. So when I'm hearing about the buses, and I want our kids to be safe, but there are some kids and some staff that have never seen Abrams. They've never worked there, they've never experienced that, and that's
correct.
Not their exposure every day. So you know, I just feel the importance of that, if we can take something.
So nine buses were put in previous to the funds that we currently received. Our regular request would have been 6, honestly.
Okay. My suggestion is we keep the 4 items at number 1 and leave the others at number 2.
Yep.
What do you say, Mr. Zimmer?
I mean, I agree. I have some similar concerns about the Abrams building. I feel like maybe we're putting that off too long.
Well,
it sounds like you're doing some with it, with some other stuff.
They got some funding through the CARES to do some stuff, right?
So through carryover, yes, sir.
Like that. So I think that with the funding situation, I know that the Board of Supervisors is probably not going to do that anyway. In my estimation, we should rank the 4 items that they requested at number 1 and leave the others at number 2.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I would like to make Abrams a number 1 and give the board the opportunity from the other 4 plus that 1.
Okay.
And again, decide. I'm
as a planning commission, what do you actually think about, Mr. Zimmer, about should it be the 4 items in the number 1, or should we add the Abrams?
I think there's value in adding Abrams to the 1 list and just showing the Board of Supervisors that we do have concerns.
Okay.
Again, at the end of the day, they're going to make the decision. So,
my thing was, I was listening to what you said, that the progress that they are making, mm-hmm. and the additional funds they've gotten this year from the CARES Act and other places, that with the things where they are, that we should leave that at number 2 for this year and possibly next year. See where we can go with that. That's my opinion. What about you, Mr. Johnson?
I think so.
What about you, Mr. Lagosino?
If it's needing the repairs, if we put it in there, the board can take it out.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to do what they want to do anyway. All we're doing is making suggestions and stuff like that, but I'm just listening to what we're being told, that the progress is being made. Well, for 5 years, there was no progress made, and now they are making progress, and they've got some additional funding.
I mean, it's also a pretty modest amount that they're rating a number two, so it's 175. I know that sounds like the government person saying 175 is a modest amount, but in the overall scheme of the budget, it's a modest amount.
So basically, we got three people that say that payroll should be added. That one is the number one, and we got two that say the other way. So we'll go with the, if everybody agrees, since it's a 3-2 decision, that we'll make all of the ones that are presently number one plus the Abrams number one.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Is there anything else on the list? Was that it? And the other stuff is the maintenance stuff that they just do. We don't ever rank that.
That's just a breakout of the CRM funds on kind of what they intend, what they estimate that it will go towards.
So we have ranked everything that needs to be ranked tonight and stuff like that. So I reckon we'll actually end the work session at this time at 6:51, and unless there's any other items that Mr. Miles needs to bring to our attention, we'll have a short recess until 7 o'clock when our regular meeting starts. Let y'all know we're about ready to go into the next session.
Yeah.
Are we ready
for 7? Yep. Hold back. It's 59. How are you? Is it okay if I cut the slide? Or do you need to sign in on these records? Okay.
Now 7 o'clock, we will be opening a regular meeting of the Blue Valley County Planning Commission for November the 10th, 2020. First item of business will be to call to Pledge of Allegiance and a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. We have a community development director's report.
Yes, sir.
Hey, good evening, Chairman Bibb, members of the commission. We'll go through some of the information from your last meeting. At the Board of Supervisors meeting on October 21st, the withdrawal request from Stage Junction, the AFD, that was approved for withdrawal for the entire acreage for Mrs. Horahan's property. And we had the two companion cases, the Village Oaks rezoning and the Sycamore Square LLC, which is the Archer Tract, to be rezoned from A1 to R3 with the proffer conditions. And the Village Oaks proffer amendment was the amendment in order to allow for the number of access points to increase from 3 to 4 on Lake Monticello Road, and that was also approved as the proffer amendment. Then, just last Wednesday, the Board of Supervisors had a Shepherd's Ag Forestal District renewal. It was on the consent agenda, and that's been renewed for another 10 years. That's in the Kent Store Way Parish Lane area. That one has been renewed once again. The Board of Zoning Appeals, we did not have any cases last month on October 20th. We've begun to continue to do our CARE Task Force virtual meetings. Mr. Dahl has been conducting those along with staff. The CARE Task Force is scheduled to go on for basically another year until June of 2021. The October 22nd Technical Review Committee meeting, we discussed the Ballinger Bluff subdivision. It's the rural cluster subdivision that's proposed on Courthouse Road. The key point to remember is even if rural clustering is considered by right, we do have the wastewater treatment units for the sewage disposal that would require a special use permit. October 22nd, that same day, we also had a webinar through the TJPDC, Regional Housing Policies. They worked on some of the final things that they're doing as far as the regional housing locator. We actually had a special guest join us from the United States Senate, Mr. Senator Tim Kaine, came in on the webinar and provided some very interesting and helpful things from when he was the governor in Richmond and the mayor in Richmond. So the next item, you'll see as far as Village Oaks subdivision that just got rezoned, Mr. Keith Lancaster at Southern Development Homes met with us through a Zoom meeting in order to get his sketch plan going forward for those new units that would be in Village Oaks. At the end of the month, we had a VDOT VTrans meeting. This was mainly some of their statewide corridor study and truck traffic studies that they have going on. The I-64 statewide corridor study was discussed, which obviously we're a part of here in this region, and then the ongoing I-81 truck traffic study for the goods and services. If anyone, as you know, you travel between Roanoke and Northern Virginia, it's quite busy in that area, so they're trying to do some changes to the I-81 corridor. A success thing for the region, the Central Virginia Regional Housing Partnership, Ms. Murray Key, if you remember when we met last August, this was one of, at the TJPDC, they are now launching actually on Thursday of this week, on November 12th. The regional housing locator, and this will be a clearinghouse or an area for individuals to go to one-stop shop and look for either to purchase a house or to rent a house or any other available affordable housing unit in the Charlottesville and greater county surrounding, which includes us. So. Once they have it launched and as we get closer to the holidays, you'll probably want to take a look at it and see if there's anything that's beneficial to anyone in your family or your neighbors. That's one thing that the board also just funded their portion of for the regional housing locator as well on this one. And that's all I have for you, Chairman Bibb, at this time. If you have any questions?
You're talking about the staffing update.
The staffing update. I think most of you all are aware that Mr. Robinson left us at the end of October. He's now working up in Spotsylvania County in a similar senior planner position. And Mr. Jason Overstreet has been with us for about a year here, has accepted the senior planner position started yesterday in that position. So now we're currently actively looking for a planner and GIS technician. Already in the past couple of days, we've received numerous applications and we'll be looking through those, Mr. Dahl and HR staff and I.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is the first of two public comment sections for tonight. People from the county can come to speak on any item that is becoming for the county. I will mention this to start with. If it may, if you're going to make comments about the Ballinger Bluff subdivision comment, the Planning Commission at this time has no knowledge of this. We have not had a package of it. There's been no community meeting, so we don't have any information on it at all. And we're not going to be able to answer any questions about it because we don't know. The only people that know about this is basically the planning staff. So anyone wishing to come forward, come forward. State your name and address. I do have a list of speakers have already signed up prior to tonight. First one was William Talley Jr.
Well, good evening. I see a few familiar faces here, and I have a question for you. Is it permissible to remove the mask when you're at the podium and I'm about 12 feet away from the nearest person? I thought I was going to smother. That's awful. Your glasses fog up. I don't know how you people do this. But anyway, to start. Don't start the timer yet. To start. My name is Al Talley. I live at 14307 James Madison Highway, Palmyra, Virginia. I'd like to use my 3 minutes tonight to talk about your rural cluster development section and the amount of density that it allows through the county as a whole. And I think that's a problem. I remember when open space came up. I remember when your first zoning ordinance came up. But when open space came up, not open space, rural housing development, it was to provide for open space. I use the two interchangeably. And it seemed like a good thing. Recently, I reread that section of the ordinance. I hadn't in years. And I find it's the preferred form of development in Fluvanna. I think you need to remember something. And the reverse side of open space is intensive development. When you have open space, it means you're pushing things together and it becomes intensive development. We have to share our resources. We have natural resources like groundwater. We have man-made resources like roads and schools. We can expand those. There's a cost. And maybe on another night we'll talk about whether developers are paying enough cost for the problems that they're creating. But just acknowledge that we do have to share our resources among the people who are here as well as the people who are coming here. And I think it's just fundamental fairness that you provide that the people, developers, who are creating some of these problems when we share our resources, it's really not fair to make the people who are already here pay for that. That should be part of the developer's burden, but we'll talk about that some other night. The other problem that bothers me about your cluster development is it allows land that is really not suitable for development to be used to justify intensive development on a small portion of it. For instance, if you take 100 acres, you've got land, it could be in a floodplain, it could be too steep, it could be highly erodible, it could be not subject to good for septic system. There could be all kinds of problems with that land that you wouldn't be able to build on it or use it. But it qualifies as 2 acres for your one dwelling per 2 acres. It just doesn't make any sense to me that someone could come in and do a planned cluster and get more lots out of a piece of land.
30 seconds.
You're kidding. Okay. My point is this, and I think what you should do, recognize that it's not a good idea to have the same density throughout the county. It just doesn't make sense. Some places could support it, other places can't. If you acknowledge there's a problem, what do? Well, you try to fix it. And the way you fix it is you declare a moratorium, or you ask the Board of Supervisors to declare a moratorium on these cluster developments. You consider rewriting it, and you fix the problem. Thank you.
Okay, the next person on the list is Tristana Treadway.
Good evening, Chairman Bibb, members of the Planning Commission. Tristana Treadway, I live at 893 Courthouse Road. I actually do not like reading something when I'm doing public speaking. However, I know I'm limited to 3 minutes, so I'm just going to read through this to get all of my points across. I'm here today to speak with you about the Ballinger Bluff subdivision or development off of Courthouse Road. I'm a native of Fluvanna County, and I've lived in my current home since 1997. My main concern about the Ballinger Bluff development is the density of the proposed lots and the effect that this may have on the water table in the area. I speak from personal experience regarding the water table. When I moved into my home in 1997, we almost immediately began having problems with our well. No one disclosed to us when we purchased this home that there was a problem with the water in the area. Our well would routinely go dry, and we would have to turn off the pump and let it rest and build back up for hours at a time. Each night, we would go down, turn off the pump, and allow it to build back up overnight so that we could then go out in the morning and turn the pump back on for us to have water. As our family grew and the problems continued, it came a time for us to finally drill a new well. After 3 attempts to drill a well, they finally hit water on the 4th well. We were told by the well drilling company that if we ever had to drill another well, we would never hit water. We would not get water. Our current well is 320 feet, and it only pumps 3 gallons of water per minute. So let me just put that in perspective for you. A shower can use between 3 to 10 gallons of water per minute, depending on the type of shower head you use. So a 10-minute shower uses an average of 30 to 100 gallons of water. We have installed every water-saving appliance, faucet, toilet, anything that we can do to save water. Even with all of this, our well still occasionally goes dry, and we have to play the turn-off-the-pump game. We don't wash our cars, we don't water our grass, we don't play in the sprinklers, we don't fill our pool, we don't water our gardens or our flowers because we just can't afford to. About 7 years ago, our closest neighbor's well went dry. Their new well is about 50 to 60 yards from our current well. Their water use affects our water use. These are real problems in the very area that a development will be going. I urge you to study this development and take all of the information into account. It is not just a matter of not wanting the traffic or the light pollution, but for me, it is the basic desire to have water. If this development is allowed at the density that it is being requested, you won't just have one or two houses with little to no water. You will have 40 or 50 families without water. It won't be our problem, but it will become a county problem at that point. If I was a betting woman, my bet would be that those lots or houses will not be sold with an upfront disclosure that warns the unsuspecting buyers that their well may go dry. At that point, the developer has made their money. They're off. I am asking that you study this development and its density, the size of the lots, the number of wells, and the septic systems, and the proximity of them each to each other. I ask this on behalf of my family, the current residents, and on behalf of the poor, unsuspecting purchasers that will inevitably have well and water problems.
Thank you. The next person, if I mess up the name, excuse me, Renee Sheovaro.
Hi, my name is Renee Sheovaro, and I reside at 1173 Courthouse Road in Palmyra with my husband Robert and our 2 boys. Almost 3 years ago, we moved to Courthouse after falling in love with our dream home in the rural setting. It's a perfect place to raise 2 active boys heading into their teen years. When we bought our home, we knew that the surrounding property was zoned A1 rural. Unfortunately, we did not realize that a subdivision with small lots, we're talking 0.3 to 0.5 is what he's planning, could be built in the rural zone property. In early August, we were rudely awakened to trees being cut around our home. The trees were cut right on our property line, leaving no buffer zone. Furthermore, we were not informed ahead of time about the clear cutting or the housing development being proposed. As if the shock of the trees coming down was not enough, we quickly learned that a cluster development called Ballinger Bluff was being planned right in our backyard. The current plan for Ballinger Bluff is for 30 homes off the courthouse, 17 homes off of Oak Creek. Our home will be affected on three sides of our property line. On one side, they're planning a road that will access the 30 homes off a courthouse. The other two sides of our property will have houses butted right up to our property line. The road itself is going to increase traffic tremendously. We're talking maybe 60 cars, two cars per home, coming right by our house. The other two, so one of the main reasons we moved to Courthouse Road was the fact that we do not want to live in a subdivision. We are now being forced to live right in the middle of it. They're kind of making a horseshoe shape right around our 2 acres. Besides the increased traffic and noise, the biggest concern we have with Ballinger Bluff is the water. The developer's proposing 47 homes with individual wells. That's 47 new wells being drilled right in my backyard. That's 47 homes all drawing water from the same aquifer as us. I'm not a hydrologist. I'm not educated on wells. But I can tell you that we are extremely concerned that our well will be affected. Several of my neighbors have reported issues with their wells drying up in the past. With so many homes in close proximity, it's only a matter of time before there's more problems. There are also environmental concerns with Ballinger Bluff, as the property is so steep. On the right side of my property is one of the steepest slopes, and it runs right down to Ballinger Creek. I can only imagine the amount of erosion and runoff that's going to take place. I'm well aware that the developer has the right to build. I'm not asking you to stop the building completely. What I'm asking the Planning Commission to do is to reduce the yield, reduce the number of homes in Ballinger Bluff so that we can all live peacefully on this beautiful land. Please take into consideration the impact this project will have on my family, on my neighbors. I invite you to put yourself in my shoes for a moment. Come visit my home and let me personally show you how Ballinger Bluff will impact my family. I will close with this. Just because someone has the right to do something does not mean that it's the right thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to make one comment before we go to the next person. Part of this is Virginia law that we have to have clustering subdivision. The law states any such locality shall provide a zoning subdivision ordinance applicable to a minimum of 40% of the unimproved land contained in residential and agricultural zoning district classification, standards, conditions, criteria for clustering of single family dwellings, and the preservation of open space. So part of that, what was done with clustering subdivision, was required by the state. Okay, the next person is Susan Schofield. Please state your name and address.
Yes, my name is Susan Schofield. I live at 111 Fairview Lane, right off of Courthouse Road. And I'd like to petition you also for a speaker system in here for people who are hearing impaired. That would be greatly appreciated. When we moved here almost 20 years ago, my partner and I were told that there were two wells on our property. Bonus, right? What they didn't tell us was that only one worked. So when we found out, water issues were always in the back of my mind. Apparently, it had taken a couple of tries to locate a water source. We moved in October of 2002. Can you remember what was going on then? Did any of you think of the drought? It was bad, right? 3 years of very little rain. I remember the gyms and restaurants begging us not to ask for glasses of water or ice and telling us not to wash our hands. My, how times have changed. I was worried about the water at our home. The water had a coppery taste, and it flowed from the faucet in a halting, slow stream. But then, it started to rain again. Remember? The copper smell in the water disappeared, and the water pressure became a beautiful thing. But the well was always in the back of my mind. A couple of months ago, over 100 acres of land was sold to a developer across the street from me. They clear-cut the trees almost immediately, and suddenly my well was in my thoughts again. This developer wants close to 50 homes on quarter-acre lots, effectively doubling our immediate neighborhood, and he wants a well for each home. There are five homes on my street. Five. The developer wants 50 homes, 10 times what is currently there. Will I still have water after 50 wells are dug across the street? What is the likelihood of another drought? And how soon? How thrifty are these folks going to be with their water? Suddenly the worry isn't just in the back of my mind anymore. How much water is beneath us and how far down? What is the responsible number of wells? What can we bear? I've done everything in my power to fortify my livelihood in my home. I can change my water filter from my bedroom closet. I have a roof over my HVAC unit, and I have a whole house generator. But if you take away my water supply, then I can't stay and I can't sell. Please limit this developer and any others in the area to a feasible number of homes and wells. 50 in such a small area isn't feasible. Please use whatever knowledge you have to carefully regulate these developments. My water depends on it. Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker is Overton McGee.
Thank you. I'm Overton McGee. I live at 924 Courthouse Road. Thank you for doing one of the hardest jobs in local government. The proposal for Ballinger Bluff defies common sense, particularly in regard to slopes and wells. Fortunately, your ordinance and your comprehensive plan seem to give you the legal basis to apply common sense to this proposal and to reduce the density of wells and reduce the number of units on these steep slopes. We believe the proposed yield is too high considering the slopes. In fact, the current plan shows a street and several houses running across a slope that's almost too steep to go sledding on. This is a beautiful piece of land. I explored this creek a lot as a child, but it's cliffs. You know, the yield needs to consider the slopes. Here's what your subdivision ordinance says in regard to yield. Consideration shall be given, among other things, to the area of land not usable for building or individual sale, including but not limited to steep slopes, etc. And, you know, we believe that you need to consider the slopes and the water availability in the yield plan. We don't believe that 47 units is the right yield for 141 extremely steep acres in an area with very little groundwater. I mean, many of us have wells over 300 feet deep. So right now, so I looked at the 4 square miles around this property. Right now, in those 4 square miles, we've got an average of 23 wells per square mile, okay? So we're talking about a well every 27 acres. And he's proposing a well every third of an acre. They're going to dry up. The homeowners are going to come to the county and say, please build us a water system, which we can't afford to do. I spoke to Nick Evans, a hydrologist in Albemarle. He confirmed this part of the county is very difficult for wells. I spoke to someone in the Thomas Jefferson Health District, who said he'd never seen a county approve wells this close together. He said it's usually the county that limits the wells, not the health department. And your comprehensive plan does mention groundwater. So I think, you know, if you reduce the density on this and you get sued, you're on good ground, because it's addressed in your subdivision ordinance and it's addressed in your comprehensive plan. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next person on the list is Liz Palmer.
Good evening. My name is Liz Palmer. I live at 1384 Courthouse Road, and we're going to do a little show and tell this evening, and we'll pass these around. These are photos that we took of the development that's going in, because I want you guys to see the steep slope. I'm only going to echo a little bit of what my neighbor said, because you guys have heard what's going on. We've lived in our house 10 years. already had to refill the well. Our neighbors across the street, they had a well collapse because the ground could not support it. And so when you look at these steep slopes, he is literally going to have to build downward. And if we lived in West Virginia, I wouldn't be too surprised about that. The ground there can hold something like that. But here it just can't. And we live 20 miles from a fault line. There was an earthquake in 2011 that moved the foundation of my house. And I'm right down, I'm across the street from Renee. What happens to these houses and the safety of these people in these houses if we have another major earthquake? Because those people on the slopes are going to go sliding, just like a sled on a snowfield. And what happens to those families? What happens to the people on top of the ridge versus the bottom of the ridge? You see what I'm saying? The houses are just going to go, phoom. What happens? And who's responsible for that? Themselves? The county? Certainly not the builder, because he's already made his money. I'm not going to continue to beat the dead horse, but I wanted you guys to have a visual so that you can see what we're dealing with. I agree with those who have spoken before me that if we are going to put a subdivision there, then we need to be cautious. We need to take into concern not only well water, but the integrity of the ground and the safety of the future residents, not to mention the neighbors who are already there who are already struggling. My family has struggled. Trissy's family has struggled. Susan's family has struggled. I don't think it's fair to put 47 families in a position where they're not going to have well water and their houses will be unsafe. That's unconscionable. And I would ask you guys, each of you, to consider what it would be like to move into a house and think that you're safe. And you may not be. To think that you're going to have water, which is the most basic necessity. A human being can go 2 weeks without food. You can go 3 days without water. And I realize it's a drastic statement, but water is the most basic necessity other than oxygen. Thank you very much for your time. Have a good evening.
Thank you. I don't have anybody else on the list that I was given. Anyone else wishing to come forward, please come forward, state your name and address.
Hello, and thank you for allowing us to have this opportunity to speak. My name is Lois Falks. I am living at 331 Oak Creek Road, which is adjacent immediately to the 15 homes that the developer is planning to put right against the property line where I have lived since 1987. I also will share the same sentiments of shock. This developer knocked on my door, showed me this plat. It's the first time I'd heard of it. It's the first time I'd seen it. I was completely gut-punched. I did not have any idea when we moved there in 1987 that we would live next to a subdivision. That is not my desire. We moved here for the country and the beauty and the quiet and the solitude and the peace. And we ride four-wheelers and we make noise. You know, we are in the country. But there are other some things that I'd like to speak about. In addition to the water and the erosion, which is very concerning, my well as well through the years has run dry several times. The children would be taking a shower, no water, shampoo in the hair. It's not a pretty sight, and it's a very real problem. With two of us, the well maintains us just fine. I'm going to present this as just sort of some questions that I have, concerns that I have about the immediate land on my area is what is the ingress, egress plan for the property? How's this going to be maintained? Is this the homeowners or is this the county that will be taking care of that? What's the forestry department's position on clear cutting and procedures? And is there any area that has to be reforested at all? What about stream buffer and erosion control, contaminant runoff? Ballinger Creek is a huge slope right down a cliff, right down to the creek. But on my property, our property, we have run off to the creek, which is across the road, run off the creek, which is right next to my spring that I intend to use for planting and wildlife, which I anticipate will dry up as soon as this subdivision is in effect and my well water will go down. The developer assured me, looked me right in the eye and assured me that this is not going to affect the water tables at all. And mathematically, that just cannot be possible. So I just kind of smiled when he said that. So I'm wondering about how future roads to accommodate the in and out of traffic will be. Is this going to be an eminent domain situation in my front yard that I'm going to lose property at some point in the future to accommodate all these extra folks? I'm concerned about the septic systems in particular, which will, as the slope of the yard comes to the property line, mine continues right into our yard as a slope. He's going to put septic tanks right against the back of the property line there. So it's going to slope this way, it's going to slope to the creek, it's going to slope on both ways. Can I just say a couple of things really quickly here? Citizens is on the top of the organizational chart that we use for the Fluvanna County, and I just really hope that you folks will consider those of us that are going to be completely impacted, directly impacted
thank
by
you.
This. And I would love to think that
thank
we're
you,
not
ma'am.
Going to let that one person change the entire flavor of
your time is up.
Fluvanna for a long, long time. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to come forward and speak? And I will tell you, I've only learned some of this tonight and so forth, not aware of it because nothing has come before us at all. So we don't know a lot about it so far like that. And from what I understand, the only thing that's going to actually come before us was a special use permit for the sewer system. That's the only thing that will come before the Planning Commission at all. So that's the only thing that requires a special use permit according to the ordinances so forth and the requirements. I'll let you know that.
But, sir, I believe
your time is up. Your time is up. Your time has been up, sir. I'm sorry.
I believe you have to approve the yield plan.
They'll do a sketch plan. That's correct. That's not a public hearing, but you all would be able to attend. Yes, sir.
The sketch plan. Anyone else wishing to come forward and speak at this time? See no one coming forward, we will end the first of two public comment sections at this time and move on to the next item, which will be the approval of the draft minutes of the October 13, 2020 meeting. Do I have any comments about the minutes to have our last meeting? Changes or additions?
I make a motion to be approved as written.
Have a motion from Mr. Johnson to be approved as written. Do I have a second? Second from Mr. Lagosino. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Okay. There are no other items on the agenda tonight. Now we will go to the second public comment section. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak on any item, please come forward, state your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one come forward, we will end the second of two public comment sections. And if anyone some staff or Planning Commission has no objection, we will adjourn at 7:36.
Mr. Chairman, I do have it. I just want to say to the Commission, and Mr. Miles, I don't know if your team can send something out about the housing partnership, just so everybody has the link. We're really moving very quickly, and we're moving on schedule to change the dynamics of what housing looks like in Central Virginia. And we did have that meeting on last year, and I'm part of the steering committee and working with the team in order to present this. but you would be, in my opinion, it would be great for you all to be able to see where we are in that housing process, and with where we are with that, and how Susanna County is greatly participating in that, and what that means for the rest of our citizens in our Central Virginia area. So, Mr. Miles, if you could.
Yeah. Kelly Harris is planning on, once it's launched for about a week or so, Susan Steinmart and the folks at the PDC and Christine Jacobs wanted to make sure it was up and running, you know, and everything. So she will, at the end of the month, in our fan mail, will launch that and maybe have some links added to the planning page and such so that people can start utilizing that. Yes, ma'am.
Good. And the in addition to that, there are webinars that are actively part of the housing partnership that you have to register for, and that's also a good opportunity if you all have time to be able to participate in those webinars. That's all I had, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Well, we will adjourn at 7:38. Thank y'all very much.